from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Same thing to everybody. All
right,
else.
Just to clarify, Ryan's a little bitter at the fact that I was like, "This is my show," and he was like, "What the fuck, man? This is as much my show as it is yours." And I'm like, "Well, you haven't been around.
I don't say it's an equal thing. I completely recognize that you are the meat and potatoes, and I'm just the gravy of this show. I'm just saying that I come back and you're like, you can't do that because it's my thing. I'm like, hey, we're a team here.
Okay, fine,
we're Amos and Andy. We're fucking Chaplin and that 14-year-old girl.
and the guy from Great Balls of Fire and his wife that was also his cousin or something?
That's sick.
I don't know.
That's just sick. Why'd you even go there?
I don't know. I just needed to talk about
it. So yes, welcome back to me. I know everybody has missed me greatly.
Surprisingly, like there has been a lot of comments and a lot of emails saying, where's that other guy?
Where's that guy that disagrees with everything you say?
Apparently, I need someone to disagree for the show to be better. No insult to my co-host, Jeff. I mean, we like having him around. He's definitely a breath of fresh air. But we like to mix it up. And I think that it's good to kind of have, like, you know, not always the stagnant formula, so it's a good thing.
And someone that doesn't always agree with you and your rather rigid views.
Rigid.
Rather rigid.
Okay, today we're going to talk about two hot topics. The first one has to do with a new law that was passed in Congress, which is the equivalent of saying that Christianity is nice. I mean,
Christmas is good, and Christianity is nice.
That's the equivalent of it. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And we're also going to talk about the... what's her name again? Gillian Gibbons, or what? I think it's Gillian, actually.
Oh, whatever.
Anyways, Gillian Gibbons, the teacher who was in Sudan and went to jail for pretty much naming a teddy bear Muhammad. So we're going to get to that. First of all, though, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in American Congress. Now, I'm not an American, so I can't judge how you spend your tax dollars. But seriously, honestly. Just to give let's give a heads up here. You want to give a heads up about what it is?
Basically, there was a Republican senator. Not like I'm picking sides or anything. Republicans suck. But there's a Republican senator that put forward a motion that basically said that, you know, wherefore as there's so many X number of Christians in America and they're like the main religion, we should therefore and whereas they've done a lot of good and whereas they have, you know, the founding. Like, if you go back in the history of America, you will find that it's predominantly Christian and of Christian values. Therefore, we should say that Christians are good. You shouldn't be bigoted fully. What is it? You shouldn't have...
We reject any bigotry or persecution directed at Christians.
And that that Christmas is an important holiday, and it should be respected as such. And the Christmas and Christianity should be respected.
Now, the actual resolution, I'll read all six, okay? Number one, recognize the Christian faith as one of the greatest religions of the world. All right, nice. Number two, express continued support for Christian in the United States and worldwide. Number three, acknowledge the international religious and historical importance of Christmas and the Christian faith. Number four, acknowledge and support the role played by Christians and Christianity in the founding of the United States and in the formation of the Western civilization. Number five, reject bigotry and persecution directed against Christians both in the United States and worldwide. And finally, number six, express its deepest respect for American Christians and Christians throughout the world. And it was resolved, apparently. It was a resounding success.
Yeah, only nine people voted against it.
most people voted for. A significant portion voted present, which just means I'll take no issue with this.
Yeah.
But no, still overwhelmingly, I mean, it was pretty even on the Democrats and the Republicans. Actually, I think more Democrats.
Yeah, more Democrats than Republicans. But, I mean, Democrats are always so afraid of being labeled anti-American that they'll bend over and take whatever stupid pro-American bill is passed their way just to prove, like, you know...
We're just as good.
They're like, you know what, this is of no consequence. This'll get us some little American flag brownies. So let's just agree to it. And you know what? To me, like, this might seem like a harmless little bill, but to me, I read an underlying racism underneath it. Because you know what?
Imagine you replace the word Christian with white.
Exactly. That is exactly what I was thinking. Because this bill is basically about Christians feeling threatened by other religions, immigrants coming in with their religions, and that's what it reads like to me, is that they're basically saying, I don't like how these people are coming in and making things like, you know,
their own
different
traditions there.
So let's get it down in writing that Christianity is the way and that Christmas is good. It's like a way of saying, you know what, like, you guys can have your thing, but it's on the books. Christmas is like, you know,
shit.
Christmas is the thing. None of this Kwanzaa, none of this Hanukkah.
None of this bullshit holiday.
Yeah. None of this whatever they do in India or Pakistan stuff.
The reaction to me, though, I mean, because, you know, the United States has been getting, like, an influx of immigrants that, at least right now, are predominantly themselves Christian. I mean, you look at the population of the states and how it's changing. The only thing that's changing is the language and the skin color.
Mm-hmm.
Going from, like, you know, the number two minority might be in, Mexicans, mm-hmm. like, seriously, but they believe in Christianity.
I think they prefer to be called Hispanics. If God,
well, they'll come.
I can understand why people missed me.
They come from Mexico, buddy.
Yes, they come from Mexico, Jacob. Thank
no,
you.
No, I'm saying most of the immigrants actually come from Mexico. They don't come from the other South American countries. It's a bit too far.
Mexicans come from Mexico.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I hear their capital is also Mexico City. Anyways, no, I don't think it has anything to do with that. What it has to do with is the, you know, fact that Christians feel under attack. I mean, I had myself, a fan of the show,
mm-hmm.
who was commenting saying, why are you always bashing Christianity? You're attacking Christianity. Be like, can't you just say that atheism is positive and just stick with that? And, I mean, in reality, I had to tell this person saying, listen, buddy, I mean, you guys are the big dogs,
mm-hmm.
particularly where I live and where you probably live. You're the big dog. You're the main dog. You're going to be the first people that, you know, we're going to criticize because I don't like Christianity. I'm going to go out and say it. I don't like it. I don't hate it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't like it. And I'm going to, every time something happens, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about it just like we're going to talk about, you know, the problem with Islamic faith in the next point that we have. But mm-hmm. I'm going to, you know, call out anytime I see something that's just blatantly ridiculous like this. And I mean, I understand where that fear is coming from, particularly with the fear generated by secular humanists or just atheists in general, because the arguments that they bring forward are very frightening. They are scary. Okay, I mean, the very fact that you take one of the biggest weapons, I guess, for atheists is Thomas Paine. Thomas Paine was a founding father. He wrote a document, I believe it was called The Assault on Reason, which essentially criticizes Christianity and throughout, like, it is a point by point deconstruction.
Yeah, but how
of Christianity in the Bible?
How big was Thomas Paine's signature on the Constitution?
Well, not as big as John Hancock's.
Yeah,
but I mean, you can still use those particular weapons, and you know, you mentioned the founding fathers are either deists or atheists themselves, and all of a sudden they feel as though the very idea of how their country is structured, everything else like that, is under threat from these usurpers coming around and saying, you don't need God. In fact, religion makes you more violent or makes you, you know, do crazy things, like the Phelps and Co., you know, the thing that we had, like, on the site, the video of those nutballs that are saying, like, God hates the world.
Yeah,
kind of,
and the ones that protest the funerals and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, the one that says, you know, sex, doom nations.
So let me just get just to make sure that I understand you perfectly here. You're saying that this bill is more about religious people feeling persecuted by atheists than it is about religious people feeling uncomfortable about immigrants.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. There's two things in the bill itself that sort of like seem to indicate that. Number one is the idea that they reject bigotry and intolerance towards Christianity. Now, it's difficult for you to find anyone that is themselves religious that's going to start going around and saying, like, hey, your religion is crap or whatever. They try to kind of all get along. They have an unspoken truth, which is like, religion is important, spirituality is important, you can have yours, I'll have mine, ta-da, we're all good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first flag, this idea that, oh my God, we need to defend against, you know, this oppression. And I mean, the other thing too is to basically say, to acknowledge the role that Christianity had in establishing Western civilization. That's my second clue. Because the idea is that you know, a person like me, for instance, it'll say that modern ethics are more of a result of the Enlightenment, which is itself not a Christian movement, which is itself actually a movement that's very anti-religious, you know, avant-garde at its time. It's kind of like saying, well, all the progress that Western civilization has really made is not a result of Christianity. In fact, most of that progress was stemmed by religion. And, you know, they're not going to like that. They're going to be like, this is another attack. No, Christianity played the role into essentially the cultural dominance of Western society. This is a way of admonishing their moral and cultural superiority of their religion, essentially.
Well, I can definitely, I mean, basically from the way that the bill was, because here's my thing, is that it could be either way. I think the bill was put together and written in such a way that it was designed very carefully not to offend other religions while basically being like, Christianity, the best. But, and in that way, it's open to interpret the way you see it. But as I said, like, it's a question of whether or not it was written that way because it was mainly to say that Christianity, religion, Christmas, these are all important things, or whether or not it was written like that because they weren't allowed to just say, you know, you people with your crazy values and your stupid Kwanzaa and you want us to say happy holidays and all that stuff.
I definitely admit that the United States does seem to have a general problem with you know, managing all of these, I guess, what PC values of people saying, like, well, you can't say Christmas, it's too specific.
Mm-hmm.
And specificity is the enemy of diversity. Remember that?
Yeah.
Anyways, and I can kind of like, I accept that frustration. In fact, I think it's silly not to say Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Because I don't even see today's Christmas as being overly religious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd find that the majority of individuals that aren't themselves Christians, they like Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
They probably celebrate Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And going around and saying happy holidays is to placate the very small group that said, oh, well, you're being too specific, you're cutting us out. And those are always the annoying ones. You know, that it's like at a movie theater. It just takes one freaking jerk to ruin the movie.
Yeah.
And it's the same with Christmas. I'm like, you know, I don't like Christmas, but my family loves Christmas. And, you know, I'm not going to try to ruin for them saying, like, don't say Christmas, say happy holidays. Mm. I can definitely understand their frustration then. And I can see part of that as being the reason for this whole thing. I don't think it's going to do squat.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if anything, I mean, you're right. There's this underlying, you know, sort of almost racist element that if you just changed peel a few away, words, yeah, you know, peel it away and basically, like, what are you trying to say, buddy?
Yeah.
Like, are you saying that the world's most popular religion really needs a bill to be able to pat itself on the back and say, you're one of the greatest religions in the world? Yay, good for you.
I mean, this is the thing. I think a lot of people, like, if there were other shows like ours out there that didn't suck, there's probably other shows out there, they would be like, well, this is just stupid. These guys are stupid pants and they obviously have nothing better to do. I'm like, you know what? I mean, House of Representatives is full of stupid people that do a lot of stupid things.
I'd rather they do something this useless as opposed to something terrifyingly
terrible. I just think, like, lots of people don't see the point. I see the point. I see the reason why they did it. I don't agree with it, but I don't think it, you know, I think they had a purpose for doing it. And they just think, you know, they're too into their own little political games where they think this actually, what happens in the House of Representatives actually affects anybody outside of Washington. But, you know, lots of people are like, this is just so stupid and useless. I'm like, it is. I mean, it's stupid and useless, but you got to look a little bit closer at it and see the reasoning behind why they did it. And it's a little bit scary.
The other thing that I find very frightening, too, and I wanted to mention this, is the idea, like, let's say you're a politician and a bill like that is presented to you, but you really do believe that the separation of church and state is important.
Mm-hmm.
That this kind of document kind of like singles out Christianity unfairly in terms of other religions, and that the Constitution is very clear about the idea that you should not do that, that you cannot show preferential treatment to any religion, and this inherently destroys that idea in a very, very subtle but very fundamental way.
Yeah, it definitely erodes at that.
It erodes it. And, you know, I'm sure a majority of these politicians, particularly the ones that said just present, they were stuck in a really no-win situation because they have to look at the political ramifications of any decisions that they make. Were they to reject it, even if the grounds are fundamentally good? I mean, somebody could just turn around and say, look at you, you're an atheist, you know, son of a bitch. You're like, you voted against this. Why would you vote against saying Christianity is nice? And of course, anyone who would just use the arguments that we've used, somebody would say, well, you're just twisting the facts. We're just trying to say that it's good. And I'd be like, well, it's inherently racist. It violates the Constitution. It's completely and utterly irrelevant. I mean, there are plenty of reasons to vote against it. But nowadays, And I mean, this digs deeper to the fundamental problem with today's politics, is that everything has become so politicized that you can't make any decisions or vote for anything based on, like, you know, any moral stance that you have, because everything becomes a strategic vantage point for
this
you.
Is the kind of thing that will come up and wreck you next election.
Exactly. Like, or making any decisions, like, for instance, you know, if you voted yes for war appropriations and then you turn around and say this was a bad idea, rather than be recognized for someone who actually changes their minds and tries to go for, you know, the moral stance, you'd be branded as like a flip-flopper.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently when you make a decision, you can never change it.
Yeah.
And this idea that they've sold to Americans is saying, well, you can never change your ideas, A, and B, you should really, like, forget about morality. Just work on these political decisions, and you always have to worry about what's going to happen in, like, 10, 15 years from this ridiculous fucking bill that you just rejected. I mean, this is the problem. This is the inherent problem.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just wish that they really thought long and hard before presenting these bills, rather than just saying, like, let's present it, we'll vote for it, it's going to go through, we're going to look phenomenal for having done this.
Well, you know what's really sad is that you basically got to pin... You got to pin the blame on the media to a degree for letting politicians get away with this kind of whitewashing, where they say, "Oh, he voted against the Christian bill. He voted against Christmas." You know, and the thing about it is in a society where you give a person a realistic opportunity to say this is anti-constitutional, this is against the Constitution, this is completely wrong, it was a completely useless and stupid bill. But you'll never even allow a person to have that kind of airtime. You're just going to replay that whole sound bit of this person being anti-Christian and anti-Christmas.
It's so because it sells more, obviously.
And it's the dumbing down of...
it's sensationalism.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, if you want to have a story, it has to be sensationalized. You can't present dry facts.
Mm.
And, I mean, this is the undoing. Like, the reason why, you know, the Second Amendment exists is this idea... the First Amendment. The First Amendment exists is this idea that basically, without a free press, without someone being able to call up your shit...
Mm.
Everything erodes. There are no checks and balances. I mean, the checks and balances with the judiciary system, you know, like the Congress and the office of the president, is a good internal balance, but you always need an external point of view. You need media, surprisingly enough, to be able to say, this is kind of crap. This is BS. Look what they're trying to pull. But those kinds of stories, the fundamentally important stories, the one with real character, I mean, I don't think anyone's able to handle it anymore.
Mm.
And what's funny is the biggest outlets for that have become blogs that go out, become really popular, like Crooks and Liars is a good example, where they're independent. They really just don't care. They're not affiliated with anyone. And they just provide that information. They put it out there. They put videos. They put links. And, you know, you can do searches on it and stuff like that. And I'm like, thank God for these guys.
Yeah.
Because really, the free media is becoming us. We are becoming the only individuals that can actually say anything against that. Because if you expect CNN to make a big deal out of this garbage, you're fooling yourself. You're freaking out of your mind. And what a shame that is. What a freaking shame that your own, like, media institutions are letting you down. You have to rely on some dude in his basement to analyze the news for you.
Yeah, it's very, very true. Very true. And it's unfortunate because it really puts a... It really puts a big question mark on anything you read. I mean, the whole idea is you should really be questioning everything you read in all media articles, because most of it's going to be wrong. But, I mean, you look at all of these, I mean, left-wing, right-wing blogs, everything like that. You got to question everything now. I mean, anything you read, I mean, half of it's not going to be true. And it's just a messed up situation where information... There's just so much information out there, and so much of it is wrong. And it's like, is a person really anti-Christian, anti-Christmas? I mean, what are the chances of you hearing the real story on that? So, pretty messed up.
It is very messed up. Okay, let's move on to the next portion. Let's talk a little bit about Sudan, and who I can only assume is Gillian Gibbons.
Okay, we'll call her Gillian.
We'll call her Gillian.
Like Gillian Anderson.
Yeah.
His hot.
So hot!
Yeah, now this X-File comes to us from... Is Sudan technically the Middle East? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, so the story is that this teacher... I mean, if you're not familiar with it, I'm sure most of you are, but we'll just cover the basics. Basically, this teacher wanted to have an exercise in her class. The exercise was really simple. Basically, the kids would learn about democracy. The way they would do this is that they would pick a name for a particular stuffed animal, kind of like the class stuffed animal.
Mm-hmm.
They would all pick a name, and then they would vote for it. Naturally, the name that they voted for, the most popular name around, is Muhammad. So they decided that they were going to call the stuffed animal Muhammad. Well, word got out, and some of the faculty told on her, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, 40 lashes. This is what you're going to get. And, you know, then it started causing up a shitstorm. You know, the embassies in the UK embassies were like, no, you can't do this. Family was keeping quiet because they're like, if we open our mouths and say anything, we're going to be in trouble. Gibbons is saying, well, you know, I really respect them. I respect the Islamic faith. I would never do anything to kind of disrespect them. And then all of a sudden, you know, there are protesters outside declaring that she should be shot dead. So there's a bunch of different viewpoints, the extremists calling for her death. And, you know, obviously the liberals, the people that I would probably call more sane, are saying, well, listen, it's just a misunderstanding. Why don't we just... She can say sorry, and then everybody can move on.
This is one thing I got to say, is that Muslims really need a PR, like some kind of PR department to handle their stuff, because they just come off seeming so backwards in Stone Age with them when this kind of stuff happens.
Well, the problem is even in their PR, they'll have people that are just, say, living in London or living in England, not England, but in America, and they're there as sort of like the voice, like the Western media's voice is saying, can you explain what's going on? And their explanation is usually either tepid, as in saying, well, you know, that's just how things roll over there, and they, you know, she should have known better, to, you know, essentially agreeing with all the points of saying, well, she, you know, idolatry is evil, wrong. So even in, there doesn't seem to even be any middle ground here. It's either, you know, you completely ignore it.
It's either you're apologizing for the fact that this is how the religion is, or you're hardlining it, and there's no one really just...
saying, yeah, maybe we need to take a deep look at ourselves and our particular values, because, you know what, they are conflicting with... you know, modern values. This is the truth. And what I found to be the funniest thing, I mean, luckily she only, you know, spent like the time in jail, time served, went back to her country. What a surprise. Of course, strangely enough, saying like, oh, it's a wonderful place. I recommend people to visit. Be like, you know what? Shut up. You're not in a position to say that. You got the hell out. It's pretty clear why you got out. If it was so good, you would have stayed. You would have stayed, but you know what?
She couldn't stay because she would have been killed.
You would have been killed. Not such a nice place, is it? Mm. No, not a kind of place I want to visit.
And it's funny because this is a classic example. This wasn't some kind of situation where you had people where it was like attacker. At least with a couple of other situations where there are people who have been really insulting or mean or just plain racist towards Muslims. At least then you can get an understanding for why everybody's so angry. But this woman here is a woman who came to Sudan to teach. And she came to do good, and she has a deep respect for the religion. So it really amazes me that these people just turned on her so completely and utterly and wanted her to be executed over this.
It's pretty frightening. The thing is, and I mean, I have to say this from just... I guess my vantage point is just one where I just can't fully grasp and understand why anyone would make a big deal out of this. And I think what happens, and this is probably what gives the Islamic faith such a bad reputation, is that there are always these few individuals, and they're very, very powerful. They're probably imams, is my guess. I don't know how the network works. And what they do is they take a small bit of meaningless news and information and they blow it out of proportion. I mean, a common example was, remember those Danish cartoons that were published?
Oh, how could I forget?
Right. Okay, well, the thing that a lot of people don't know is that many of those cartoons were actually forgeries. They were created specifically to, you know, to incent violence and to say, like, look, what they drew him on a pig and stuff like that. And most of the drawings were really tame, really, yeah. Really very tame.
The worst one was the one where Mohammed had the bomb in his head wrapping.
Yeah, right.
That exactly. Was pretty much the only bad one.
That was the only bad one. And really, it didn't generate any interest for months after it was published. But it was picked up by a small yet very influential group of people. And what they do is they throw gasoline in a very, very small fire. And it just catches on. And the hysteria that, you know, that can be generated over there is unbelievable. I mean, that really is the problem. I mean, the problem is that a majority of the population, in many of these Muslim countries is very, very poorly educated. And they are highly influenceable, particularly by, you know, their mosques. So as soon as your, you know, your imam tells you, this is outrageous, she should die, and I mean, they're always very passionate about it. It's so easy for the situation to really get out of control because it's that whole mob mentality. Mm. Like, you take an individual, Islamic guy, you sit him down, you're like, this happened, you'd probably be like, you know, I don't like that, I find that's disrespectful, but it's probably pretty rare the breed of person that's going to tell you she should get whipped 40 lashes or she should be shot dead.
Well, I mean, here's the difference, I say, is that with this Gibbons chick, I mean, as I said, like she was over there, it was obviously to anybody who was willing to take 2 seconds to look at it, a big misunderstanding and a mistake. And like, even if what she did was wrong, she apologized so profusely for it that nothing really should have happened. But on the other hand, with what happened with the cartoons, I mean, basically what you have is you have the people in the mosque, these people talking to everybody. The message is very simple. It's like this: Western society hates you. They think you're stupid. They think you're dangerous, and they hate your guts. And here's them mocking you. And that's basically the message that they sent that whipped everybody up into such a frenzy. And I don't disagree with that message. I think there's a lot of truth to what those people, what they're saying. It is basically, you know, Islam is you know, gets a lot of crap. And, you know, and I mean, I'm not saying for that they don't deserve a lot of it because of the way that they react and the way that everything gets converted. But I'd say that there's a lot of truth to what's to what they say as far as our perceptions of them, and there's a lot of reason to get angry about it. In this case here, there's no basis for it. There's nothing at all. So there's no truth behind anything as far as this woman being insensitive or intolerant or being racist towards the religion. So this is where it's really just like, to me, it just seems like it's getting out of hand. It's like, Westerner did this, let's whip her.
Well, the question that I have is essentially, if this is just one incident where one woman who's apologetic, who's obviously, you know, just did a slight error, and where there was such controversy.
But it wasn't even her. It was her class.
It was her class.
Her class, full of Sudanese kids.
And my question is essentially this. I'm like, how can the West really say, well, we can open up and we can have normal relations when such a thing happens, where a tiny drop creates this tsunami of terror, of saying, like, you know, where you have to work this diplomatic, you know, knife's edge kind of situation to save both faces, where really so much is at stake over something so trivial. And really it's kind of like every time, it's like being in a room with a complete psycho, and then every time you just say, you know, something offhand, he pulls out a gun on you.
Yeah, it's like you cough and you just, shut up! You're so loud! I could hear you walking upstairs and I'm trying to sleep.
and you know, as much as, for instance, the West may be talking smack and saying, like, you know, we're fearful of these guys and so on and so forth, I mean, a lot of it is just talk. So much of it is just talk. And of course you could mention, you know, the Iraq War as being an obvious example of not being talk. And I agree. I mean, that's definitely, you know, a very dark example. But most of the objection that comes from the civilized world towards it, the objection that they are most fearful about and hate about, is talk. And I have noticed the biggest trend in Islamic faith is this very deep-rooted insecurity about the religion itself. Because, you know, in terms of the big three, it's the new guy. It's, you know, like, it's relatively young compared to the other three. And, you know, you look at the Quran and you look at the Bible, you know, the Old Testament, stuff like that, and you're like, wow, this is a complete forgery. Like, not forgery, but this is a complete copying of, like, almost word for word of a lot of these passages. So I think that there is this sort of sense of insecurity about the religion itself, of saying, like, we need to be protective. We need to work hard to, like, exclude individuals. And the fact that it's been so difficult for the majority of, you know, people who believe in Islam to really modernize, to align themselves with modern values, is a demonstration of just how insecure that particular religion is. Of saying, like, if we institute, you know, secular law, if we bring in, like, if we let women drive, if we do this, it'll undervalue and it'll erode our religion itself, as though it cannot survive within those elements. And I'm like, why don't you look at the way that the other religions have managed so far? They've done pretty good. In fact, I would argue they're doing better than you guys. They're not doing better in terms of how they're reaching, say, the poor and the indigent.
But the other religions are doing better because they're now officially watered down and half-assed. I mean, look at the brand of Christianity that pretty much... I mean, the reason that Christianity is such a widespread thing across North America is because it's the easiest lazy religion out there. It's like you can consider yourself a Christian if you don't go to church, if you don't do anything, if you're a bastard, if you're in jail for killing people. I mean, it's like... Christianity accepts everybody except the gays. and even then, a lot of, you know, you can still be gay and be like, I'm Christian, I love God, even though everybody hates me.
That's why it's always done so well. That's why it's like the most popular one, because it's just, it's really easy to get into it.
You're looking at this from a rational point of view, where you're like, why don't you modernize like these ones here? And they look at that and they're like, dear God, no. That is exactly what they want to avoid. They would rather probably die in a blazing inferno trying to protect their religion from like people like me and you.
I know, but this is inherently the problem, because things are coming to a head. I mean, the world is becoming flatter all the time, and really they have to modernize. I mean, it's no longer an option.
Oh yeah, it's make or break.
It really is make or break, and it's just. You know, the reformation that currently is happening in the Muslim world is a direct reflection of those needs. Any civil war that you see is one particular group, either Sunni or Shiite, trying to have dominance, theological dominance, over the next, to basically chart the course. We saw those, well, we didn't see them, but if you look back at the Christian history during, you know, any reformation, I mean, a lot of these things weren't very peaceful. And the only way that people manage to find any kind of solace and peace is really being through this secularization, modernization, of saying, well, you know what? The original role, the role that religion has always told you that it fulfills, the one for, you know, guiding you with laws and that kind of stuff, maybe this is the problem. Instead, it's kind of take a very esoteric stance of just basically guiding your eternal soul. That's their plan. You can't create any laws or any rules governing that. They will have a monopoly. As long as you believe that there's such a thing as an eternal soul, they'll have that monopoly. And you know what? It's lucrative. It's definitely lucrative. I think the future is definitely in that field. I mean, if I could invest in that, then I would.
I mean, if religion is to survive, that's how it basically has to convert to. I mean, that's what happened in America, and I mean now the religious, the religious contingent are trying to make a comeback more towards, you know, a bit more of a hands-on, you must do what we believe kind of stance. But I see that going down because people like you and me pushing back.
The big problem, the huge problem, is that whenever religion feels as though it's law-abidingness that determines whether or not they are good. Christians or good, Muslims or whatever. When it's one of those follow this set of arbitrary and sometimes violent rules. I mean, that's when it starts getting pretty damn scary. Because really, which rules are you going to choose? I mean, there are rules that you could choose that line up perfectly well with today's morality, right? Love your neighbor, don't kill, don't steal. Okay, we can line that up because these will be true, and I hope true for a long time. But then there's other kind of really huge problems about which of the myriad of rules that appear in any religious books, whether or not you're going to follow. Should I stone my daughter for, working on the Sabbath? I mean, for being disobedient, for not respecting me, for loving another deity? Holy moly, like all of a sudden you're left with just kind of like a clusterfuck of rules that you have to choose. So when a group says, we're going to stick with these and our... You know, how good we are has to do with how much we follow this. This is when I get scared. This is when I'm saying, like, please, like, you try to beg with these people, being like, oh, for God's sakes, please, just lighten up or something. Just find something to do.
Or just, here's my whole position, is always being just leave the people who don't believe what you believe alone. And this is the reason that I'm sitting here right now doing this podcast, is because of religions out there and people out there who don't respect that request from me, which is to leave me alone when it comes to these issues. Leave Leave me alone when it comes to things about stem cell research. Leave me alone on issues of abortion. Leave me alone on issues of gay rights, sexual education. You know, the history of the Earth and stuff like that. It's like all of these things they are not leaving us alone about. And I, as far as I'm concerned, it's like that's why I got to come on here and talk crap. And it's like we're not. It's not so much, I don't look at it as we're attacking religion or we're attacking Christianity or we're attacking Muslims or Islamic beliefs. It's just that, you know, these are things that cross the line and we're talking about them to try and explain why they cross the line and what can be done about it and what's not rational about it. And that's pretty much why I'm back here doing this show with you.
Tonight.
And every week. You want to talk leading out? About how this is going to be more regular now?
Yeah, absolutely. I made a rule. I mean, I had a lot of people sort of like commenting me like, what? Because I remember one person was like, you know, you don't complain the fact that you have this life or a bunch of stuff going on. Just get her done.
Just do it.
And you know what? I was a little bit lazy about it. These kind of things happen. But now, more regular, we have like a regular schedule. We've definitely put time into it. Because you know what? Like, the podcast keeps getting bigger, and it just seems ridiculous not to follow up on it. It would just be stupid. anyways, next week we're going to talk a little bit about Christmas, War on Christmas. We're going to go a little bit more about that. There's some pretty hilarious stuff that's happening.
It's our Christmas theme episode.
It will be a Christmas special. Mm-hmm. And I said Christmas, not holiday special, because like I said, I don't care about saying it.